Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
It's Texans Training Camp, live from the Houston Methodist Training Center. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you at Training Camp. Hopefully as lively a training camp today as we had on Wednesday. It was popping out here on Wednesday on the field, in the stands. It was a good time out there.
There was a cut-up that I found on TikTok. Can't think of the guy's name. But of basically, he had taken all the different fan footage and everything of practice.
What an age we live in, man.
I know. We're not allowed to do anything with our phones. We'll have it slapped out of our hands. But meanwhile, the thousands of people in the stands
right. Can
take videos and everything. So you kind of afterwards have to hodgepodge together and find some of these
doing
highlights.
The Lord's work.
But this one guy, he put together all the hard hits and everything.
Yeah.
And it was even chippier than I had appreciated.
Yeah, when you condense, I saw the same thing you did. When you condense it down, it makes it feel super chippy out here.
Yeah. You can see why it culminated you know what, honestly, it was, I would call it a dust-up or just a confrontation right up until the point where Derek Stingley cheap-shotted Dalton Schultz.
I think everything minus that, D'Amico is fine with.
Then one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, like, it was bizarre that Derek Stingley came up and Schultz, it was a cheap shot because Schultz was not looking at all, was walking away from the fray straight ahead. And he might as well have gotten hit upside the head with a beer bottle, like in a bar fight. You know,
you're trying to
do the right thing and walk away from a bar fight, and then somebody just clocks you with a beer bottle.
Yeah,
you know how that happens all the time to me.
I do. all the time.
Just because I said something about his sister, and it was weird. It was really, really weird. But other than that, it was just kind of a bunch of guys shoving each other and everything.
Does it make you think, like, when I saw that? Because, granted, we didn't have a great vantage point where we were standing. The fans in the stands had a much better vantage point than we did, especially the ones down at the north end of the bleachers.
Yeah.
Had a really good vantage point. But it was so random, the Stingley run at Dalton Schultz, where I was like, what did he say to him?
Like, what the hell
what
happened?
What God said? Because there was no point where I saw Dalton Schultz, like, cheap shot Derek Stingley in the crowd or anything like that.
Well, this
unless
is
he got, like, up under his mask while, you know, like,
we,
while
we couldn't,
in the scrum.
Yeah, we couldn't tell what was going on in the scrum. The funny thing, you know how these things go, though, too? Just like a bar fight, you when the peacemaker gets triggered and then the guy's trying to settle everything down and then all of a sudden something sets him off. That was Lonnie Johnson. Because Lonnie Johnson was, you were right, Sean, we were trying to figure it out the next day. You had said this and I didn't see this part of it. CJ was trying to get into the scrum, but I think probably to be a peacemaker.
Yeah.
But Lonnie Johnson, to his credit, was kind of holding him back. Yeah. I think just probably saying, like, no, listen, you don't need to be in this at all, man.
Yeah.
And so, like, Lonnie Johnson was being a peacemaker. Remember, Lonnie Johnson was kind of a hothead back when he was younger.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but then when the second scrum formed, one of the only actual maybe kind of punches that I saw thrown was Lonnie Johnson. Yeah. It wasn't a punch, but I think he, like, shoved somebody up towards the face or shoulder pads. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, we shouldn't be surprised. You had this audio. The Colts linebackers.
Yeah. EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin, the guys who have been jawing back and forth with CJ all offseason. These guys, right after the season, had a discussion, and this is back before things got ugly between CJ and Zaire Franklin and
right
EJ
after
Speed.
The season,
they were
heaping
praise on CJ Stroud in this podcast,
but
they also gave a little bit of praise to Dalton Schultz.
The best part about Schultz is he made me respect it because a lot of white boys,
they get sensitive.
They get sensitive and be like, "Why are you white?" Like, you know what I mean?
Bro, what do you mean, bro?
Dalton was at it though. Like, you feel what I'm saying?
He was at it. Now he says some fucking can't even tackle. Whoa!
And he wasn't. And the crazy thing was, he wasn't crying to the ref.
Okay.
Yeah.
When it was beef and Dalton got his push back, his push after the play, and I pushed him back or whatever like that, he ain't flop.
Okay.
And look at the ref, so I'm like, all right, you feel me? I can respect
your gangster.
Is we respect his gangster,
yeah,
Sean.
Man.
I respect Dalton Schultz's gangster. I say that to you all the time. On my scouting report.
You won't shut up about
respect
it.
Respect his gangster.
Respect Dalton's gangster.
I think another thing that they talked about in that podcast, though, was that, you know, Schultz was totally cool after the game. Went up to one of them and was like, hey, man, you know, it's all just football or whatever. Yeah. So, likewise, it's weird because I've never seen a cheap shot like that that Derek Stingley pulled. I think that's what makes it different than the normal football fight. Usually in a football fight, you leave it on the field.
Yeah.
That was just a weird situation. I'm guessing Stingley probably just, for whatever reason he did it, they'll talk about it. You know, like sometimes it's usually not even conversation. You're like, we good? Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
That was just kind of weird. Like I would imagine Stingley probably doesn't feel great about it unless he felt like Schultz said something that was over the limits. I have no idea.
We're probably due for a Schultz press conference at some point here. He's not been one of the players that's gone to the podium yet.
I will expect a gangsta no comment.
He
knows not to talk to the popo.
Snitches get stitches.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe there's a rematch out here today. Maybe there's not. The Athletic has their pre-training camp power rankings. From a couple of days ago, Seth, Josh Kendall put these together. This is the highest I've seen the Texans on any power ranking in the history of the power ranking era that we are in right now. Mm-hmm. Had they had these back in 2012, maybe they would have touched this lofty status that they're at. They've got them fourth right now in the NFL, dude, preseason. It goes Chiefs, it goes Niners, it goes Lions, and then it is the Houston Texans at number four.
You know the crazy thing about that, Sean,
is that
you said the Lions without any surprise. If you want to go back... I got
a one-year burn-in on them.
If you want to look at like the Lions over the last two decades or what have you,
yeah.
I mean, the Lions have followed that kind of a rapid ascent much faster than they thought they would, and they're doing it with Jared Goff.
The Browns are sixth. You know, like there's all kinds of...
Boy, the Browns are probably the biggest potential swing in terms of what it could be for them and what it could not.
It's all Deshaun, right?
Based on Deshaun.
Yeah.
They have... the Browns are a little bit like the Colts have been for a long time,
mm-hmm.
where, man... They've put together a hell of a roster, but you've just got this one little lingering detail, the quarterback, the most important position in sports.
And the most expensive guy in the league right now at $64 million on the cap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're six. Yeah, there's a bunch of teams in this upper reaches that have not had a lot of success historically.
In two seasons in Cleveland, Watson has a passer rating of 81.7, a 1.6 touchdown to interception ratio. So just you think about that, like... Two to one used to be good back in like 1999. You know, now
that's
the better quarterbacks
now.
Are all getting like 4-1, 5-1 touchdown interception ratio.
He's below
2-1.
Yeah.
He's been off target on 15.8% of his throws. Early in his career, he was off target on 6% of his throws.
That's crazy.
So he's like 16% of his throws are inaccurate now compared to six. He's more than twice as inaccurate as he used to be.
Yeah. It's just that's. That's a big swing, and they're at that stage now too, Seth, where they got to start making stuff happen.
Yeah,
because they're gonna have to be making decisions on keeping guys and getting rid of guys. And Deshaun is a guy who's untradeable.
Yeah, and even Nick Chubb, like you've already seen his injury and just what's the shelf life on awesome running backs? It's just, man.
Where are you on the Texans being fourth on things like this right now?
I think the biggest question mark in a lot of people's minds is the strength of schedule the Texans will face. And one of our listeners pointed this out the other day, that as promising as the offense was, they did really struggle against the better defenses in the league last year. And the Carolina Panthers being one of them. The Panthers did have a good defense despite everything else being so bad. I think that's where the other huge question mark that curiously people in the national media aren't talking about is simply the running game. It's that, man, this is exactly what happens to teams that have a good quarterback but no running game. You play really well against bad teams or mediocre defenses. But when a team comes up and they know they can stop the run with their front seven, they don't have to walk a safety up into the box, and they can just sit back in coverage and make it difficult for the passing game, then it's you're not going to be a great offense. And that's really the big test this year is, hey, you've got three awesome wide receivers on the field.
Yeah.
You're going to face a lot of light boxes. Can you capitalize on that with Joe Mixon, with Damian Pierce, Jawar Jordan, whomever else?
Whoever it is. Yeah, it's interesting because it's very easy to get excited about the Texans just based on the moves that they made this offseason, the additions that they made, the guys they've been able to keep on the coaching staff. the how well the young nucleus performed last year, and now there's nothing but upside for those guys. It's real easy to get excited. But now I'm watching these videos pop up on X of guys that, you know, NFL guys, and there's a lot of them. I saw three of them yesterday doing this, where they put the schedule of the team in a graphic, yeah, sort of above their head, so to speak, and they go game by game. And they put a green light next to the ones they think a team wins. They put a red light next to the games they think that team is going to lose. And I saw a couple of them do the Texans yesterday, and they're going through them, and I'm just focusing on game by game. And they're, you know, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I could see them losing that game for sure. Yep, I could see this. I could see that. And the ones I saw weren't doing anything outlandish, like having them lose to the Patriots or having them. They were just doing it. It was pretty conventional picking. And at the end of the day, they were winding up at 9-8 a lot of times.
Right, yeah. You know? Well, and I think that is where, like, it's all projection right now based on the names on the roster and what we're seeing in training camp here. They need to be a better team than they were last year. Yeah. I mean, if you look at this ranking, the Ravens are one spot below the Texans. Yep. And we saw what happened to the Texans in the playoffs versus the Ravens. Bobby Slowick had talked about that on the Green Light podcast, just how, man, you know, it's, you see the importance of all 11 guys having to play really well, because it was a breakdown here, it was a breakdown there. So for the Ravens, who lost, they lost some good players in free agency. They gained a Derrick Henry, and he's 30 years old. The big question for them really is, man, Lamar Jackson lost 20 pounds. And I just...
Where?
And then he's just been... He's had to, like, tap out of practice already. He's been sick, apparently.
Illness,
but, I don't know if he's 20 pounds. He's lost 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's not like he was not chubby. This is not like... this is not like Ben Roethlisberger showing up and losing 20 pounds, where you're like, well, yeah, I could totally. He probably had 5 pounds in his waddle, you know, just in 1 pound dip.
Chin was 11 pounds.
He spit out his dip, and he was.
So,
experimenting with weight when you're already a really, really good player is always curious to me. And I'm all for it when you're a guy that, you know, looks like you're not really reaching your full potential. But when you're already good and then you have a drastic weight loss like that, go back to LeBron James when he showed up looking all gaunt that one year.
Yeah.
He was plumped up like a Christmas goose by Christmas
Day.
He
realized
it.
He
had to put that weight back on.
He realized it. Okay, so this time last year, the Texans were at best 30 on rankings like this, right?
Yeah.
A year ago, like, they were supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league. Nobody knew C.J. Stroud was going to get this good this quick.
Yeah, one of Pete Prisco's hot takes that they were going to be like the 27th best team.
He was bullish on them at 27 or whatever. So, but I think most people had them 30, 31, or 32. Most rankings like this. Of these three teams, these are the 30, 31, and 32nd teams on this power ranking. Which, if you had to pick one of these teams to make a Cinderella 2023 Texans type turnaround, who would it be? The Arizona Cardinals, 30. The Denver Broncos, 31. The Carolina Panthers, 32.
I'm going to say the Cardinals, just because, for one, Kyler Murray has never been in a system like this before, and this has a lot of Kubiak-Shanahan elements to it, and it's depending on how Kyler Murray responds to it, I think it could be really good for Kyler Murray. I mean, we used to always talk about, man, you put a really athletic quarterback in that 2011 Texans offense, and that was back when you could really exploit the boot a lot more because there was more running in the game and everything, that it could be scary. And I think that's where the Cardinals are, and it's all just a matter of how well does Kyler Murray really respond to being put in a role that he had never been in before. He's under center all the time. He's really got to direct a lot more on the offense than he ever had to be before. Cliff Kingsbury never really asked him to be an NFL quarterback. Which, again, that's why I'm amazed that Cliff Kingsbury needs to go back to college. But he keeps getting paid in the NFL.
Yeah, why not, man? It's
so,
a paycheck.
But their defense last year was not as good as I thought it would be. I mean, some of that might be just because they were, you know, counterbalanced by a bad offense. I think Jonathan Gannon is a genuinely good defensive coordinator. And as head coach, it's not always easy to translate that. But I think the Cardinals would be most likely to potentially be a surprise.
They would be mine, too.
Yeah.
Oh, and Largely because I don't know that those other two teams have a quarterback situation that's settled, you know?
Right. And you,
I mean, I know Bryce Young's going to be the quarterback in Carolina, but he might suck.
Well, and I, like an idiot, I forgot to mention Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
is there, too.
Yeah.
So you're pairing that up with Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
It could be really good.
Could be fun. Could be fun. And they were, I know they were 4-13 last year. They were a competitive football team. The Cardinals. So they were a bad football team,
yeah.
but they were, like, you had to bring your lunch to beat them. Like, the Texans know that. They
honestly,
had to bring their lunch to beat them.
Even in that Texans game, a lot of it, like, Kyler Murray had just come off of injury. I think it was his second game back from injury.
Second game back, yeah.
It was his second game back, and in a new system where he was doing a lot of stuff he's never done before, I think he was just flat-out gassed in the fourth
yeah.
quarter in that game. I think it was just, you rarely hear this, but I think it was physical fatigue by the quarterback coming off of injury in a brand-new system, more so than anything that hurt them in the fourth quarter. And there was, it was a very tight game.
Hey, is Will Anderson over 8.5 sacks stealing? I feel like Will Anderson is a double-digit sack guy this year. You had the numbers on guys making the big leap in year two.
Yeah, a lot of the guys.
Like, solid rookie years.
The guys, the interesting thing about it.
That's the number in Vegas right now.
Was that I looked through the guys who were leading the league in sacks over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And then I also went back and kind of cherry-picked a couple guys like J.J. Watt before and Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald still was one of those guys.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's very, very common for those guys, like almost to a man, they had single-digit sacks in their first season, and then they had double-digit sacks in their second season.
Yeah.
Everything just kind of clicked for them.
Yeah.
I think that...
What could keep Will Anderson, other than injury, from getting 8.5 sacks?
I mean, for him to be a consistent double-digit sack producer, he did have to improve his technique. And I say did because I think he has a lot. I think he's added to his repertoire. I think he understands the strategy and the chess match that is being a pass rusher and edge rusher, especially in the NFL. So I'd be surprised if he gets less than 8.5. The only part about it is that, man, sometimes there's randomness to it.
Sure.
Like the sacks itself, you know, you can have a great pass rusher can have a year where he's doing the exact same stuff, but he ends up with 9 sacks just because of bad luck or whatever. I'll be surprised if he doesn't get 8.5.
9 gets me my over on 8.5. I'd take 9 sacks on that wager. Danielle Hunter's number is 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
He had 16.5 last year, and now he's in a system where he gets to, quote, just go.
He's in a system where he gets to just go, but the other side of that is that it's a system where last year he was on the team that blitzed the most in the league.
Yeah.
Brian Flores' defense was hyper-aggressive when it came to blitzing.
Yeah.
And that creates opportunities for defensive ends where you're going against running backs, you're going against tight ends. At times you're unblocked. Guys get flushed to you. So now he's in a system where it's the exact opposite. They're going to have a 4-man rush as much as anybody else in the league. I don't think D'Amico will ever be, because it's not his philosophy, he's never going to be in
that
leaderboard of blitzing, right?
Yeah.
He wants to be able to selectively blitz, but he wants those 4 guys up front to get it done. So I don't think it's a slam dunk that just because he gets because the restrictor plate is off and he can just go, he probably will see more double teams.
D'Amico Autry's got the same number as Will Anderson. He's got 8.5 on it. Now, he had 11.5 last year.
Yeah. If I were being completely, purely... objective about it.
Yeah.
I think last year was a little bit of an outlier for him.
For him, for sure. That's why I might take the under.
And he's probably going to rush on the inside a lot more this year than he did last year, and it's harder to get sacks in there.
Yeah.
So probably I would take, if I had to gamble on it, this is why I don't like gambling on my own team.
Right.
I would probably gamble the under.
I'd go over Hunter, under Autry, over Will Anderson.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Derek Stingley Jr., 3.5 interceptions. I would go under on that because I don't think he's going to get thrown at.
Look, if you look at the career stats of very good cornerbacks, they generally get a boatload of interceptions in their first couple seasons and then hardly any after that because there's other opportunities elsewhere on the field and they just don't test that A1
It happened to him last year. He had all his picks like the first 4 games back from injury.
Yeah, and even like in one of the picks was a batted ball or a tipped ball by Will Anderson
at the line.
So,
of scrimmage,
you know, the trajectory wasn't right there. It was really good ball skills, but that's the one thing that's really stood out to me. By the way, like including in that interception the other day, yeah, his ball skills are
incredible.
So good.
Yeah,
when he was tracking Tank Dell down the field, it was a classic. Like the ball was in the air, Stingley had his eyes right on Tank Dell, read Tank Dell's eyes and hands, and just went up for the ball at the right moment.
Yeah, he made it look routine.
Yeah, he's got his body control.
It's crazy, dude.
Boy, when he was sizing up Dalton Schultz and everything, I was like, he targeted him just
he
right.
He hit him on the button, yeah.
Hit him right on the ear hole, you know?
Ear-holed him, yes, yes. Payne and Pendergast with you. We're live at Texans training camp. Rain has gone away for right now, but we'll see if that holds off. So we got some teams, man, that have a lot of work to do contractually with some guys. Thankfully, the Texans are not one of them. Their house is in order right now contractually. But the Bengals, the Cowboys, the Dolphins.
The 49ers,
all of a sudden Trent Williams.
Trent Williams with 3 years left on his contract.
What's a new deal?
Sitting out.
I don't like seeing that. Because you know who has 3 years left on his contract and plays left tackle here?
Man, I feel like you got to set a hard precedent there. That
3 years left?
He's
35 years old or
36.
Whatever. 36.
He's 36.
Yeah.
He just turned 36.
I would tell him, sorry.
I'm sorry, old man. Yeah. We just can't do it, man.
They'll do something for him.
They should give him a reverse mortgage.
Go live life.
Was that? We'll forward you this.
Got so much time.
We'll forward you this money, and hopefully you'll die before the end of this. Coming up next, Seth speaks for reverse mortgages.
Minute here for reverse mortgages.
As my demographic follows me into old age, I will be, in about 20 years from now, I'll be reading those reverse mortgage reads hardcore.
Seth Payne here with my good friend Trent Williams.
Coming up on next, coming next, we've got Matlock coming up next.
My God,
but first,
that's great. The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
But speaking of those teams, this is Mike Brown, the owner, and I believe he's one of those owners that works in personnel too.
The Bengals don't spend much money on anybody other than players.
He's also head chef.
Their coaches are their scouts. And,
right. Yeah. So here's Mike Brown. Jamar Chase, after the Justin Jefferson contract, Jamar Chase is one of these receivers who's looking for a big contract extension. Here's the owner of the Bengals on the likelihood or not of that happening.
We're not going to say, oh, no, we aren't going to do that deal if it's the right deal. But it's not so likely that this is the good time to negotiate. The off-season is a better time for that. And we're going to try to keep focused on the football part. So I'm not going to rule anything out, but I will tell you that the die has probably been cast.
Boy, that guy sounds like a deal maker
this
right there.
This is a guy that...
I'm a Bengal fan. I know that deal's getting done.
He's making the classic mistake of trying to copy the Patriots.
Right.
He's trying to pull his best heavily on barbiturates Bob Kraft. Like, whoa.
That would terrify me if I were a Bengals fan. And that's we got a cut on the chances of Jamar Chase getting a contract extension. And that's the 40 seconds of audio I get.
Remember when Mike Lombardi, the former GM of the Browns and elsewhere, had said the other day on Pat McAfee, this isn't the NBA. Players don't just demand trades and then get them. There's another one, Carson Palmer. Yeah. Carson Palmer just flat out said he was going to retire instead of playing for the Bengals. You know, like it just, no. I wonder with the Bengals. The Bengals they used to be a notoriously stingy franchise. They've loosened up a lot in recent years.
Yeah.
I wonder exactly how they'll handle this situation.
I don't even make this a Bengal thing. Like, it's not a lot of receivers. Even Justin Jefferson had to wait till the fourth year to get his contract extension. You know what I mean? He's a 2020 draftee. Jamar Chase. He's 3 years in, you know? Like, I don't even blame
you.
And the Bengals have a lot of stuff they've got to work out.
When you're not a quarterback, the quarterback's the only player that still really wields that big D energy.
After 3 years.
You know, like to where it really moves the meter. When the Texans did it with Nico, it's not like Nico was pressing for it or demanding it. It ended up just being, it was a smart thing for the Texans to do. As a kind of a hedge, and it was a smart deal for Nico to take as a hedge. Like, Nico knew he wasn't going to get the kind of money the other guys were getting. The Texans are very bullish on Nico Collins, And they realized that Nico wouldn't be expecting a huge contract. So you get him a very respectable deal right now, and you lock him down through what would have been his free agency year. And you know, if he stays healthy, and even doesn't perform up to the ceiling of where he is, it's still a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
As long as he stays healthy.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, Nico did get extended after 3 years, so it does happen with guys. I think, too, Seth, sometimes guys that get drafted in the third or fourth round, like Nico Collins and Amon-Ra St. Brown, are probably easier to get inked in on long-term extensions like that than a guy who got picked in the top five, or in the case of CeeDee Lamb, a mid-first-round pick, because they're already living in kind of that high-rent district, whereas Nico and Amon-Ra St. Brown, this is the first time they're getting flashed, like, the big-time, big-time
They've got a certain, a humility about them.
Yeah.
But B, it's their first big paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all big paychecks in the NFL, but you know what I mean.
Relative.
That first bleep you money that's being shown to them.
Mark Chase has gotten that
already. And it's financial security for the first time.
That's right.
So that's a big part of it. Okay, if it's a guy that's already got financial security for the rest of his life, then, you know, he can be greedy.
He can dig in.
He can kind of let his ego get involved in everything. With Nico, for one, he doesn't seem like he's got a gigantic ego, but even if he did, you got to kind of suppress that a little bit and say, okay, what are we talking about here? Like, after having a smattering of injuries my first several years in the NFL, am I really going to roll the dice on this year being the one that gets me the big payday?
That's right.
The other interesting thing going on with the negotiations with players is the Tua Tagovailoa negotiations. The thinking is that whenever they made their initial offer to him, it was before the salary cap got bumped up. And then after the salary cap gets bumped up, Jared Goff gets that deal.
$53 million.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence
got his deal.
Jordan Love's going to get one soon, too.
And some people think that maybe the Dolphins have kind of held fast to their original offer and their original thinking, where the players and the agents are like, listen, what do you think, I'm a schmuck? We know how spending's going to go over the next couple of years with the cap expanding like it is.
Yep.
It's like, no, the yard marker has changed.
I just don't think they're all that into Tua, you know?
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
I really think they're kind of...
I think Jacksonville is into Trevor Lawrence. I don't know that they should be, but I think they're into him. I just don't think Miami's that into Tua.
It's kind of like your girlfriend gave you an ultimatum, and you're kind of like, well, I just... You know, things are busy at work, and I got to... I guess, okay, yeah.
Right.
I got to... Yeah, let's get married.
And I got my
eyes on the
colleges, and there's like five hotties coming out of college pretty
but
soon.
But things being... Everything being what it is, like, I just kind of, you know, yeah, let's get married.
Okay. Here's your $52 million a year. Jerry Jones, as long as we're sticking with owners that are terrifying their respective fan bases, here was Jerry Jones yesterday meeting with the media. See if you can keep up with this analogy that he makes between himself and an option quarterback.
We are so involved in trying to see where we are with our situations that is a major part of seeing the leaves fall, seeing the time go by, seeing this day and this week, how they go by. And by the way, fault, I have in my life played option quarterback so many times and wait until the last leaf on the tree. And I, if you want to picture an option, pure option quarterback going out to the sideline, I have run that ball and kept it and not hand it off to the back, not pitch it back, not throw it. And I have run that thing all the way out to the sideline before I made the decision. Because I couldn't get whatever it took to, it wasn't right for me to make the decision. And so what our fans, what you're seeing, what we deal with is we're buying time. We're option quarterbacking, and we're going on out toward the sideline, and we haven't handed it off. We haven't pitched it. We're trying to make our mind up what to do. Does that sound like Mahomes to you? A little bit?
No.
Okay. It do. It really do. So having said that, I'm just trying to give you a description here. That's what we're doing. And we're waiting for something to happen in the morning.
This is the key thing where that broke down was when he brought Pat Mahomes into it.
I was like, wait,
that
what?
Was the it. Honestly, I'm kind of like, all right, yeah, I can see what he's saying. I like the analogy. You know, I appreciate a good analogy. The problem is that, like, the equivalent of a GM doing something that Pat Mahomes is doing would have to mean that you're like an all-time great GM or something in your time. Like, Jerry, you're not an all-time
great. I'm kind of like Mahomes, am I not?
I'm
kind of the Pat Mahomes of GMs.
He brought it up. Like, any analogy in the world right up until the moment where you compare yourself to the greatest person doing it, that's the...
The analogy. I was getting the analogy for one. For those who weren't picking up on the analogy, he was basically saying, In negotiating with CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott and Micah Parsons, something, a process that feels like, to Cowboy fans probably, like there's been nothing going on.
Yeah.
I think he's explaining to his fan base, like, look, I'm the option quarterback who's running towards the sideline, and I'm going to wait to the last possible second to make the best decision, keep it or pitch it.
So the problem with that and him comparing himself to Pat Mahomes is that
Mahomes isn't an option.
He's 0-1 on the way they've done it with Dak Prescott already, yes, because the right decision, in hindsight, I can appreciate their thinking at the time when Dak Prescott first was, you know, trying to get an extension, where they were, you know, if they didn't really know what they had in him and they wanted to wait and see, they ended up in a year in which Dak Prescott had a gruesome ankle injury. They ended up giving him that deal eventually, which ended up being a lot more than it would have been the year before.
Yep.
So here you stand several years later, and you're still using that same strategy that burned you once before, and it makes it harder to operate under the cap and put talent around your quarterback.
Yeah.
Because it will be, if you don't do it right now, and they pull the same thing this time, the quarterback contracts next year are going to be just astronomically higher than what they would have been if they had done Dak Prescott early in this offseason.
We're going to feel that here in a couple of years, for sure. Well, and they neutered themselves with the first Dak extension because they put a clause in there that they can't franchise tag him.
Yeah.
So they, this time around, so they don't even have that leverage in their back pocket.
Son, I don't know what you're talking about with this neutering business, but have you seen my paternity suits? This is this is nonsense. I am nothing but virile and fertile.
There I don't act like an option quarterback. I'm a go-for-it guy.
I'm just, we get to that point, I'm Dirk Diggler.
I'm fullback up the middle is what I am.
The one thing they call me, old Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. That's what they call
me. That's what they call me.
Johnny Appleseed of angry unclaimed children is what I am.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Did you see the, not to totally shift gears here, the Deshaun Foster introductory press conference, the UCLA head coach introductory press conference.
It made me a UCLA football fan.
Did it really?
It did, yes.
Okay, so
I'm pulling for UCLA this year. Yeah.
This was Deshaun Foster. So UCLA and USC are joining the Big Ten this year. So this is their first trip to the Big Ten media days, right?
Yeah.
It probably feels a little bigger than the Pac-12 media days. Like the Big Ten is, that's Mecca. You know, them and the SEC, those are the two biggies. And Deshaun Foster is a first-year head coach. He's an alum. He was a running back for the Bruins back in the early 90s, and he's the new head coach. And you know how it works at these media days for these conferences. Like PJ Fleck, the Minnesota head coach, went up there yesterday, reportedly used his entire 15 minutes monologuing. They only got two questions in.
Wearing a fancy suit,
he was yapping away. Yeah, wearing a nice tie and a vest, probably. Deshaun Foster, this is what his introductory press conference sounded like.
How you guys doing? I'm happy to be here. Glad to be a part of this great conference. Finally putting two great emblems together, UCLA and the Big Ten. We're a school that's won, 123 championships, so this fits us being right in this conference. Football-wise, we're just excited, you know. I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program, but we're in LA. It's us and USC.
Actual pause. Staring. Staring. Figuring out what to say.
I'm just basically excited, really. That's it.
There you go. Well, bad for him, man.
Well, the part that, if you couldn't hear at home, he says, we're in L.A.
Yeah.
That was where it got,
I talked over it a little bit. Yeah.
That was the, when he says we're in L.A., that's where I started to get, I can't watch this. I'm not into cringe comedy, man. I have a hard time. That, Oh, what was the episode of The Office?
Scott's Tots.
Scott's Tots. I can't watch. It took me like 7 efforts to make it through that episode.
That surprises me that you're not into some cringe.
Cringe comedy. Sean, the empathy is too great in me.
I know.
I'm an empath. That's what they always say about me.
I know.
Yes.
I'm not surprised you're an empathetic individual, but I'm surprised that it's that you're that cringe-averse, I guess.
I hate. Oh, yeah.
Real cringe, because that's not an episode of a fictitious TV show.
There's one thing. Tom Coughlin once said that at the end of the day, being a head coach of an NFL team, it's a blue collar job.
Yeah.
You know, like don't go thinking of yourself as a CEO or what have you. It's got elements of all that, but it's like it's a blue collar job. You're a non-commissioned officer in the Marines. You know, it's a there's an earthiness to it, and sometimes the best guys on the football field are horrible in press conferences when you have to put a suit on them.
That's fair.
So I'm gonna, and you know what he didn't do? He didn't get up and try to act like he was some motivational speaker or something.
No.
So I'm pulling for UCLA.
I kind of am too. I felt bad for the guy.
I think the whole – I wonder if this is what happened. I wonder if he said when we're in L.A. I know he was going slow up to that point. I wonder if that was supposed to be a joke and he just didn't deliver it right, so it wasn't clear that it was a joke. And then when he saw how there was no response at all, that's when he froze.
That's tough.
He was like his first time at an open mic comedy night.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize that there was a chance that nobody would laugh.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can empathize with him, man. I've been in one or two situations like that. Went up in front of a crowd. It's not easy, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Training camp getting going today at 9 a.m. live here from the Methodist Training Center. It is practice number 7. Up next, I got to talk to Jeremy Pena yesterday for a few minutes.
I saw that
at the Taquerias Arandas headquarters. Yeah. I had him give his assessment of the acting chops of his various teammates. So we will have that. Also, I think we got a tell here at camp yesterday as to where the Texans are in the CBS broadcast pecking order. Like, which announced team we're going to be seeing the most of this season.
I think I got to tell. Okay, good.
Where do they stack up on the marquee, the Texans? We'll have that for you coming up next.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.